We're beginning Masechta Bava Kamma and beginning Seder Nezikin. Seder Nezikin as a whole talks about, the beginning of, so Seder Nezikin talks about Dinim Mominus in general, about all, most of it is about Dinim Mominus, about Dinim involving monetary matters between one person and another. Later on in the Seder, you have parts of Masechta Sanhedrin and Makkos and talk about things involving Dinim Nefashos, but I guess you could say more in a general way the Seder mostly talks about things involving Beis Din. The first three Masechtas, the three Babas, there's actually an opinion later on in our Masechta that they originally are one big Masechta, but it deals with the various Dinim Mominus, the various monetary Dinim between one person and another. You have a Gemara in Shabbos that mentions that the six Zorim of the Mishnah are hinted at in a pasuk in Yeshaya, where you have six words over there in a row, where Amunas Itecha Chosin Yeshuas Chochma Vadas, and Seder Nezikin corresponds to Yeshuas. One meaning of it is because Nezikin means damages, and here we're saying, no, so we're talking about damages, but we're talking about how a person saves himself and how he saves others from being damaged and avoids causing a hezek to one another, as we're going to talk about, in fact, that a person has a responsibility to watch his mammon and make sure to watch his property and make sure that it doesn't cause damages. So Masechta Bava Kamma focuses on dinim of damages. Afterwards, the other babas deal with various other monetary matters that Rebbe once explained, actually, the three babas form a progression in the sense of a kama mostly talks about sort of kind of negative things between people, one person's property or he himself or whatever damaged somebody else, and now we have to make good on it, which refers to like so the most of the Masechta talks about a person's property damaging somebody else, his ox or other animal or his fire or his pit or other his possessions or whatever. Yeah, later on in the Masechta we're also going to talk about dinim involving stealing and injuring somebody and whatever, so the last few prakim of the Masechta talk about such dinim. But basically, Bava Kamma is all about where you have adversarial relationships between one person and another, which represents like an earlier stage of human development where you have one person is harming and injuring another, directly or indirectly, and you have to deal with it. Then Bava Metzia goes on to talk about more dinim of involving buying and selling between people, which is more of an advanced kind of thing where people have learned to be a little more moral and not injure each other, but rather to do business with one another. And then Bava Basra completes that by talking about, for example, issues involving partnerships and other such things, showing like you get to a point where people are actually working together for the common good. It's also property issues, but in other words, it's more like not so much the adversarial kind of thing that we have in Bava Kamma, but rather more so that Rebbe talks about then that you have like an idea from Bava Kamma to Bava Basra. You're going through the progression of like human development, social development, going from damages that we're talking about over here until eventually you reach the higher stages where people learn to work with one another and preparing for the times of Mashiach. So we're going to start talking then about Nezikin, about the various kinds of damages. So the Mishnah starts off. The first few prakim of the Masechta are mostly going to focus on cases where a person's property or a person's possessions damage somebody else. So the Mishnah says, Arba Avos Nezikin. There are four main categories of Nezikin. And we're going to call them obvious, as the Gemara is going to point out. Each of them has toldos as well. Each of them has secondary things that are an offshoot of them. And we'll see in the Gemara some details about that. The word nezikin, by the way, literally means damages. Really, the word would be mazikin, things that damage. So the Rosh brings that actually, the Gemara is going to say later on in the Perek that the Tana of our Mishnah was from Yerushalayim and spoke the Yerushalmi, the Eretz Yisrael, the dialect of Lashon Kodesh, where there they would use the word nozik to mean what we would think of as mazik.
Rashi says, because
these are the obvious are the ones that are written in the pasuk explicitly, and then we're going to see in the Gemara each one of them has told us. For example, we're going to talk about, you have the av, there's an av called keren, where an ox gores somebody, gores another ox or whatever with its horns. A tolda of that, for example, is going to be biting, which is also something that the animal doesn't naturally do and doesn't have hanah from it. We'll see in the Gemara those details. So we'll get into that. But yeah, the obvious are the ones mentioned in the psukim. But I was saying also, the Rosh mentions, really, the expression should have been Abba Abbas Mazikin. But the Tana of our Mishnah uses the word Nizikin or Nozik to mean things that cause damage. The kind of thing that usually we would use the word Mazik for it, but in his dialect of Lashon Kodesh, they use the word Nozik for it. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, many times when a Mishnah will start off with a number like that, it'll say Hain. For example, you have Abba Rosh Hashanim Hain. Here you're lacking the word Hain. And so Tosfos discusses a couple of reasons why. One of them is because the Mishnah is not so much wanting to tell us that there are four types of Ovis Nezikin, but rather it wants to tell us, as it continues in the Mishnah, that you should realize that each of them has unique features, and therefore you can't derive one from the other. In other words, you can't say the Torah could have said one of them, we could have derived the other ones from it. So that's one reason Tosfos says. Then Tosfos says it's just a style. Sometimes the Tana will use the word Hain, sometimes not. Other Rishonim point out, the Gemara is going to tell us in a couple of blocks that there are actually many more Ovis Nezikin than the ones we're mentioning here. You have one Braisa that mentions 13, another Braisa that mentions 24, so therefore our Mishnah can't say Hain, because that would imply there are only these four, and the fact is there are many others. Anyway, the four are, the first one is Hashur, an ox. Now, we're going to see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities what that can mean. There are various aspects in which an ox can cause damage. Eventually, by the way, the Gemara points out later, and the Mishnah points out later in the Masechta, it's not only an ox. The Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim, in connection with an ox that gores or stomps or whatever, but in fact, the same din would apply to any other animal. The next one is v'habur. The second one is a pit, which is, as we're going to learn as we go through the Masechta, it can mean an actual pit that's dug into the ground. It can also mean any kind of thing where a person leaves out something where somebody else trips over it or somebody else gets injured by it. Say, for example, later in the Masechta, we're going to have an example. Let's say that you leave broken glass in the street. That would be an example of bur. That's what we're saying, that each one of these others has told us. The Torah only mentions the case of Bur, where a person dug a pit, but we understand that there are other similar things, that there are other things similar to that. The third one is V'hamaveh. Maveh, we're going to learn in the Gemara on Gimel Amud Beis, there are two different opinions what it is. We're going to have Rav and Shmuel, one of them. We're going to have the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, whether Maveh means an animal eating things, or whether it means a person causing damage, and the Gemara will explain, according to each one of them, why that can be called Maveh. And the fourth one, Vaheheber, the fourth one is fire, where a person lights a fire in his property, and it goes and spreads to somebody else's property. Rashi points out that these are basically being listed in the order in which they're found in the Torah. First, the Torah talks about Shur, then it talks about Bur, and then afterwards you have the other ones. Tosfos gets into some details about that. Again, we're going to have the different opinions what Shur represents. There is an opinion that it means a regal, where an animal steps on things and damages them, and that's mentioned in the Torah only after the other ones, but fine, the word shur in connection with damages is mentioned earlier. And then Tosfos goes into some other details about why they're in this order. Marsha actually explains a very interesting point in connection later on when the Gemara deals with what Maveh is. Marsha points out that these four Ovis Nezikin also represent, they also symbolize four different ways, four different kinds of disasters that can strike people. We find mentioned in Pesukim. There can be famine, there can be plague, which are epidemics, hostile goyim with swords and other weapons like that, and there can be fire. And so he explains, so these four represent those, and hever comes last in the sense because it's the most total destruction. We find, for example, look, in this week's parasha, how did Hashem destroy Sodom and Amorah with fire? Because that represents an absolute total destruction. All the other ones are a limited form of destruction, and therefore, so sometimes it happens, the Pasuk mentions, Hashem may have to send one or another of them, but Hashem does not send a total fire to completely destroy the Jewish people, Chas v'Shalom, because we always have to, Hashem has Rachmanos on us, and Hashem makes that we always continue to exist. And he goes on to explain that Maveh, in particular, represents Edom, according to the two different opinions that the Gemara explains later what Maveh is, so it represents that Hashem, that we're constantly under the domination and the danger from Edom, and Hashem protects us from them. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Loi hare hashur kare hamaveh, v'loi hare hamaveh kare hashur. The way it is with the shur is not like the way it is with maveh. In other words, you can't say the Torah couldn't have said shur and we would derive maveh from it, because each one has unique features that the other one doesn't have. For example, when it comes to shur, now again, you have two different opinions that we're going to learn in the Gemara, what shur means over here. One is it means specifically what we call keren in the Masechta, namely when the ox uses its horns to gore. So now, in that case, then, there's a kula in it, because a shur, it tends to cause damage. So therefore, you could say that, fine, when you have a creature that you know intends to cause damage, then you have to guard it. How do you know, for example, maveh, when an animal eats something, it's not intending to cause damage, it's just intending to fill its stomach. So maybe you should say, well, I can't help it. Animals eat. What am I supposed to do? So therefore, so you wouldn't have known maveh from shur, and vice versa. V'loi hareha maveh, kareha shur, and vice versa, maveh is not like shur, because just the opposite. You could say that you could say that maveh, if we say that it means eating, is something more common, whereas keren is less common. And then again, you can also, according to the opinion that maveh means a person causing damage, and according to the opinion that shur means an animal stepping on things or eating things, then also you can talk about how each one has unique features that you can't derive one from the other. That So therefore, that's why the Torah had to list them separately. Neither of those are similar to fire, because both shur and maveh, however we define them, involve it's a living creature. As opposed to fire is not a living creature, so therefore, if it had said in the Torah only shur and maveh, we couldn't derive from it that there's the concept of nizikin when it comes to fire, or at least we wouldn't know the same dinin. I'll explain that in a second. Yeah. So the fact is, Eish is not like them. It doesn't have ruach chayim, which Tosfos points out in a way that means there's kind of a kula in it. The Gemara is going to explain later on that Eish, unlike all the other ones, means you need an external factor involved. Shur and maveh, you don't need an external factor. An animal goes and damages it all by itself. It goes crazy and it damages, or it's angry or whatever, and it damages. Maveh, whether you define it as eating or whether you define it as a person damaging, again, it's something that the animal or the person does all by themselves. Bur, for that matter, also is just sitting there. Eish, on the other hand, in order to damage, requires something else. You need the wind. So therefore, in that sense, Eish is different than all the other ones. Now, yes, Rashi points out, even though we had the list, Shur, then Bur, then Maveh, and only Hever is last, here in the Mishnah, when we talk about the Loi Harezeh, Harezeh, we have to put them out of order, because, yeah, if we put Bur, then you can't really talk about Eish anymore. Once Bur is also Ein Bur Ruach Chaim, a Bur is also something non-living. It's a pit in the ground, or various other things that you might have, various other hazards in the road. Those also don't have Ruach Chaim. So therefore, the Mishnah had to vary the order and put Eish at this point, and then skip Bur and get back to it only later. Tosfos points out, though, also, now the fact is, the Gemara is going to end up explaining, after it goes through the unique features each one of them has, the Gemara ends up explaining in a couple of days, in principle, you could learn them all out from, if you have Bur plus one of the others, then you could learn all the others. Then you could make a Tzad HaShava. You could show each one of them has unique features, but both of them have this in common, that the Torah makes you responsible for looking after them and paying damages if they did cause damage. So you didn't really need to list all four of them, but the Torah mentioned all of them, and the Tana mentions all of them. One second, in the sense of Yagdil Torah v'Yadir, the Torah wants to be greater and more glorious, and therefore it mentions more details even when it doesn't happen. But yes, ultimately, as the Gemara is going to end up saying, we could have derived all of them by just a combination of a couple of them. We didn't.
The Rambam also many times just says Kiyotze then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So, but here it goes to the trouble of listing all four of them because Lahagdil Torah v'Yadir. Tosfos, by the way, also mentions an interesting point. Now, what are we saying? If we didn't have unique features in one of them, then we could learn one of them by a kal v'chomer from the other. What happened to the concept ein onshin min adin? You have a concept that when it comes to punishing, you can't do that based on a kal v'chomer. Tosfos discusses now the Mechilta, in fact, says that point, that ein onshin min adin. However, Tosfos says that the Gemara Bavli does not necessarily agree with that point. Different Rishonim talk about various reasons why Ein Onshin Min Adin might not apply in this case. One of them being maybe Ein Onshin Min Adin, in fact, only applies to Mrs. Bastin or Malkus or things like that. Maybe it doesn't necessarily apply to Dinim Mominus. Maybe Dinim Mominus you could be Onshin Min Adin. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Now, when it comes to all three that we mentioned so far, Shur and Mava and fire, all of them have this in common, that they travel and they cause their damage that way. They don't cause their damage where they're standing. They cause their damage by going from one place to another. So none of them are kahare habur, she'in dauker leilachol hazik. None of them are like a burr, where a burr stays in one place and causes the damage over there. So therefore, again, in other words, if you had all three of them were said, if it said shur and mave and hever, you wouldn't know from that burr unless the Torah told you. Because again, you could argue, you could say, fine, I know I have to be careful of things of mine that are going to move from point A to point B. I have to make sure that they don't do that. But a burr. So it says, oh, yeah, maybe you could say it's like a gurdum, whatever. The point is, you could have thought to say, look, a burr, okay, I dug a hole in the ground. Fine, it's people's responsibility, animals' responsibility to stay away from that. Mela, for example, my ox, okay, you know, they can't control whether the ox is going to come at them, but they can control whether they come near my burr. They ought to be careful not to. And yet, therefore, the Torah has to tell you that no, it doesn't work that way. Now, we are going to learn later in the Masechta, each of these four Ovis Nezikin not only has unique features as far as how it operates, it also has unique features as far as the dinim with it. For example, a burr, there's no chiyuv if I dig a burr in my property and somebody's animal walks in and falls into that burr, I'm not liable for that unless I gave permission for the animal to be there, because otherwise I could say, what's your animal doing in my property? As opposed to some of the other Nezikin over here, that would apply on my property as well. Some of them will apply only in Rosh Hashanah. Some of them will apply only in Rosh Hashanah Nizik. That's what Gemara is going to go through. As we go through the Masechta, we're going to go through these various dinim. Anyway, continue.
If the animal went onto your property and you didn't put a fence, are you liable as the owner of the property?
So again, you know, you could say the owner of the animal might well say, well, you didn't put a fence, therefore I can't be responsible for my animal going into your property and eating something, let's say, maybe, but would he be able to say, therefore you're liable for having a pit over there and the animal fell in? Not necessarily. You could still say that's your problem, that you didn't guard your animal and prevent it from going in. Well, we're going to see such a deal. We're going to deal with such a dinim later in the Masechta. We're going to deal with such details.
But you could answer to that, you know, everyone puts a fence around their property and you didn't, so in a way you're liable.
But that still doesn't mean that I'm liable for your animal falling into my pit when I have every right to have a pit in my property and you're responsible for watching your animals and making sure they don't go where they're supposed to.
Right, but it could be a split damage.
No, it's not going to be split. We're going to talk about in our perek, we're going to talk about you have, when it comes to keren, when it comes to an animal goring, you have chatzi nezek versus nezek sholem. By the other ones, generally you don't have that. But we'll talk about, we'll get, as we go through the Masechta, we'll talk about such dinim.
Okay.
Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Hatzada shavah shebehen. What do all four of these oldest nezikin have in common? Shadauken lahazik. All of them are things that normally cause a hezek. And therefore you are responsible to guard them. You are responsible for your possessions and your property to make sure that it shouldn't cause damage to somebody else. And there's a variety of explanations among Acharonim where exactly we get that concept from. Where exactly do we find in the Torah a chiyuv to make sure that your possessions don't damage others? There's a good deal of discussion about it. Is it just because of the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael? Is it because since the Torah is saying you have to pay, then that alone implies that you have an obligation to avoid the situation in the first place? And there's a lot of different explanations where exactly that feels. So why doesn't the Torah have a specific prohibition? Is maybe it doesn't need to. It has, like this, for example, we could talk about, yeah, that's, for example, the... So for example, it can be part of the mitzvah of Gneva. You have a mitzvah, you're not allowed to steal, and that implies even you're not allowed, the part of that mitzvah is you're not even allowed to steal intending to pay back. So part of that would be included also, you can't cause a hezek even though you're planning to pay back. So yeah, there are Rishonim, the Rabbeinu Yonah in fact says it is included in the mitzvah of Lo Sigzel. The Yad Ramah says it's included in Lifne Iver Lo Sifin Michshol, that you shouldn't cause somebody else to stumble, or part of a Hakalodecha Kamoicha. So you have a variety of different explanations among Rishonim and Acharonim. There's a lot of different explanations where it comes from exactly. Okay, so continues the Mishnah. Uch shehizit, and here's another thing all of them have in common. Bog hamazik, the mazik now becomes obligated, the owner of that possession becomes obligated, l'shalem tashlumei nezek, that he has to pay back a payment for the damage, the neitav ha'aretz, using the best of his land. Now, the Torah says that the Torah says that, for example, in the case where a person's animal goes and grazes in somebody else's field, the Torah says, meitav sadehu, meitav kama yishalem, he has to pay back with the best of his field or the best of his vineyard. So now, later on in the parak, the Gemara is going to explain, when it gets to this part of the Mishnah, what it means is, if you want to pay with money, then there's no meitav. You can pay with whatever kind of money. If you want to pay with shava kesef, with other kinds of movables that are worth money, then you can also pay with whatever one. Shava kesef afilu subin, as it says later in the parak. You can even use bran in the amount of the value. But if you're going to pay with land, specifically, if you're going to tell the guy, you know what, I did $100 of damage to you, therefore you're entitled to take $100 of my land, then that has to be meitav ha'aretz, the best of the mazik's land, which we call in Gemara terminology idis. Later on daf zayin, daf ches, the Gemara is going to deal with details within that din. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Mitkatoni ovos. Now, since the Mishnah has used the word ovos nezikin, mitklal de ikatovos. Well, an av necessarily presupposes there's a tolda. There must be a secondary thing that comes from it. So the question is, given that there are, and we're going to have examples of them on Omer Beis, toldi sehen kayotze behen or lav kayotze behen. The question is, are those toldas, are they like the av, or are they not like the av? Now, what does that mean? In other words, Sarashi later on explains, in other words, are we going to say, for example, when we talk about, let's say we're going to talk about on Omer Beis, that a tolda of Keren, again, you have the av of Keren, when an animal gores another animal and injures or kills it, then the Torah says you have to pay. A tolda of that would be, for example, if one animal bites another animal. So now the question would be, Rashi explains, do you have to pay in that case, or maybe not? Maybe the Torah is only saying that the obvious you have to pay and not the toldas. Which in that case, I mean, Mephoshim deal with the question, well, in that case, then why would we even call them toldas in the first place? So there's a variety of, maybe it means only similar in that you have to watch out for them. Maybe it means it's similar in that you have to watch out. You have to make sure, the same way as you have to prevent your animal from goring, the same way you have to prevent it from going and biting, but not necessarily that you would be liable for the damages in that case. You could argue that too, but there's other explanations as well. The Rif gives an explanation that we know when it comes to goring, as we're going to discuss throughout the Masechta, that you have Chatzi Nezek versus Nezek Shomim. You have the animal to begin with is called a Tam, where it doesn't have a tendency to do like this, and therefore you only have to pay half the damages, and only if it does it three times or more, then it becomes a Mu'ad, then it becomes you've been pre-warned, and then you Chayiv Nezek Shalom. So the Rif says the Gemara's question over here can be as far as the other Toldas as well. Maybe you should say, for example, we're going to talk about later on, that a Tolda, let's say not with Keren, because with Keren we are going to end up saying that, but let's say, for example, when it comes to Shane, to eating, so a tolda of that, for example, so Shane is basically where the animal gets hana from the hezek it does. A tolda of that would be, for example, that if an animal sits down on something where it's a comfortable thing and it damages it. So scratches itself would be another example. Yeah, so then you could argue, maybe then you would also be chayiv only for chti nezek. So that's the question. Is it like that? Oh no, is it nezek shalim like all the others? Anyway, so let's figure out like this. The Gemara says we have other examples in Torah where we have the term obers and toldas. So let's start with Gabi Shabbos. When it comes to the dinim of Shabbos, the malachas of Shabbos, Snan. Now we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, obers malachas aborim chaser achas. You have 39 obers malachas, and again obers miklal de ikat toldas. And we know that the word obers again means that implies that there are toldas, there are secondary things that derive from those. And we know that toldas say in kayotze behen. We know in the case of Shabbos, the toldas are exactly like the obus, in the sense, loishna av chatas, loishna tolda chatas. It doesn't matter whether the person does an av or a tolda, either way he's going to be chayav chatas, if it was b'shoigig, loishna av skila, loishna tolda skila. And then there's also no difference if he did his mazid with edim v'hasra, he's going to get skila either way. Say, for example, let's say you have an av of Shabbos is, let's say, for example, not to grind grain. A tolda of that would be not to file down a piece of metal to get shavings off it, let's say. So now, whether a person grinds grain on Shabbos or whether he files metal, either way, he's going to be chayav achatas if it was b'shoigig and skila if it was b'mezid. So there's no difference between the av and the tolda. So therefore, my ikar ben av toldah. So then we have to ask in that case, what is the actual difference between an av and a toldah? Why do we define some actions as an av and others as a toldah? And the answer is nafkamina. The difference between them is like this. De'ilu ovid shtei ovis bahadi hadod. Suppose a person does two ovis malachas, one after the other. Bahadi hadod literally means together, but it doesn't mean together. It means that he did them one after the other, or in the case of a chatas, all it has to be is within one period of time of not knowing that these things are malachas. Mechayev, akol chadar v'chadar, he will be chayev individually for each one. Say, for example, a person on Shabbos plows and also plants, he's going to be chayev two chatars. And the same thing, and inami shtei toldos b'hadi adodim chayev. The same thing would be if he does two toldos. A tolda of plowing, for example, is digging holes in the ground for other purposes. Let's say to put in a fence post or something. A tolda of planting is, for example, watering plants. So if a person were to water plants and also dig a hole to put in a post, he'd also be chayev two chatars. The ilo av tolda diday, but if he does an av and a tolda of the same av malacha, loy mechayev elachada, then he would be chayev only one. So if he both plows and digs a hole in the ground, then he's going to be chayev only one, because that's an av and it's tolda. So that's why it's important to know that there are avis and there are toldas. But other than that, in terms of the actual consequences for each one, the consequences are the same, whether it's an av or whether it's a tolda. Chatos v'shoigig and skill of amazing.
You say there's a difference between Zikin and Shabbos. If Shabbos, Yechayev v'chatos, it doesn't matter what the level or the intent, you know, the severity of what you've done. You did an av, you did the aveda.
Yeah.
Chayev v'chatos. The chatos is always the payment. The einish is always the same. By the Zikin, it depends. I could have made a hezek for $1 million.
Well, no, but that's true. I mean, a chatas, you could say also a chatas can cost different amounts. That's a fair point, though. Yeah, I mean, as far as Shabbos, you're always bringing the same kind of chatas. It's a fair point. Nonetheless, though, the fact is, in the case of Nezikin, it's always going to be that, well, that's what we're trying to figure out. Is it, for example, that in the case of Tulus and Nezikin, maybe you're not chayev at all, as Rashi says, or maybe you're chayev only chatsi nezek for all Tulus, like the Rif says. So that's the question. Maybe with certain kinds of nizikin, you're chayev the full amount, and others of them, you only chayev half the amount, or maybe not at all. That's what we're trying to figure out. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Ulud of Eliezer. Now, that distinction between an av and a tolda, that works out very nicely according to the Chachamim. But what about according to Rabbi Eliezer? The mechayev a tolda v'makam av. Rabbi Eliezer holds that no, a person does an av and a tolda, Rabbi Eliezer is going to hold that he still has to bring two chatars. Rabbi Eliezer would say, in our example, if a person both plowed and dug a hole in the ground, or both ground grain and filed metal, Rabbi Eliezer would make him chayev two chatars. So then according to him, am I kodalei av, am I kodalei tolda? Well, then according to Rabbi Eliezer, what's the difference between an av and a tolda? According to him, there's no actual difference. Anything that's also on Shabbos is all in the same category. And the answer is, according to Rabbi Eliezer,
you can say there's more than 39.
So in effect, he's saying there's more than 30. Well, but he's not. He agrees that there are 39 other. Right. I mean, in effect, he's saying that you have, in other words, like this. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, when the Mishnah tells us, Ovis Malachas Aboim Chosa Achas, why does it need to tell us the number? We could ourselves count the number of Malachas over there and see that there are 39. And the Gemara explains, that comes to tell us the maximum number of Chatois a person could ever be Chayev four on one Shabbos, if it was all Behelam Echad, so a person knew that it was Shabbos, let's say, but he didn't know any single one of the Malachas, and he does all 39 of them, then he'd be Chayav 39 Chataris. According to the Chachamim, there's never more than that, unless there was Yediyah Bein Tayim. That's another matter. If he knows in between that these things are wrong, and then he forgets again, that's another matter. But we're talking about as long as he didn't know, the maximum would be 39 per Shabbos. Now, Rabbi Eliezer would disagree with that. Rabbi Eliezer would say that it doesn't matter. However many actions he did, he's going to be bringing that number of chatois. It could be 40, it could be 50, it could be 100. So according to him, why is it relevant to say that there are 39 avos malachas? So he learns, the Gemara in Krisus discusses this point that Rabbi Eliezer mentioned that point in Masechta Krisus over there, and then Rabbi Akiva disagrees with him over there. Anyway, so the answer is, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, the question is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, am I korelei av, am I korelei tolda? So according to Rabbi Eliezer, why is it relevant to call certain actions an av and other ones a tolda if according to him they have the exact same consequence?
In other words,
So according to the Chachamim, we said the difference is you have to know whether something is a tool of a particular av. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, what's the difference? Now, Tosfos brings up the point, actually, when it comes to Asura, for the person to be chayev, Mrs. Beistin, the Edom have to give him, so somebody has to give him Asura. And the Asura has to be the actual Malacha that he's doing. So, say, for example, a person is, let's say he's filing metal on Shabbos, you can't tell him you're doing a Malacha of writing. That wouldn't be considered a valid Hasura. You have to tell him the Malacha that he's doing. Now, on the face of it, then, it sounds like, as Tosfos says, based on Gemara and Shabbos, it sounds like if you tell him you're doing the Malacha of filing, that's no good. You have to tell him the Malacha of Tosin, which is a Tolda of. So wouldn't that be relevant to Koins of the Yazir as well? Tosfos says that no. Well, Tosfos' first answer is that no. If you were to tell him filing, that would be fine. If you tell him, let's say you're doing the Malacha of writing, that wouldn't work, because then he's going to think that's a joke. What do you mean? I'm obviously not doing anything that in any way is similar to writing. But if you tell, whether you tell him toichin, which is the av, or whether you tell him filing, which is the tolda, either way, that would be acceptable. Or, in fact, Tosfos' answer is the very answer that the Gemara is going to give about the difference between avos and toldos. That itself will answer, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that if you're going to give him the hasra, yes, you have to give him using the name of the av. Even Rabbi Eliezer would agree with that.
Even though
he holds that in terms of consequences, the tolda is the same, yeah. So, namely, hach to have a b'mishkan chashiva kori le'av. What was done in the mishkan as an important malacha is called an av. Something that was not done as an important malacha in the Mishkan, kori like tolda, is called a tolda. So even Rabbi Eliezer will agree with that distinction. The distinction would be, in other words, grinding they did in the Mishkan, because they had to grind up various kinds of herbs to make the spices, to make the tortas and things like that. They did not have to do the malacha of filing metal on the Mishkan, and therefore that is considered a tolda. Tosfos brings over here a different girsa. Tosfos brings over here a different girsa that it's not anything that was done in the Mishkan is considered an important malacha, but rather anything that was done in the Mishkan and is considered an important malacha, meaning, in other words, the criteria would be for it to be called an av, it would be both. It has to be done in the Mishkan, and it has to be done, that it was an important thing that was done in the Mishkan, meaning rather than as a byproduct of something else. So even Rabbi Eliezer, however you learn the girsa, either way, Rabbi Eliezer will agree with that distinction, and therefore even according to him, it's relevant to talk about av versus tolda. Okay, so we know by Shabbos we have Ovis and we have Toldas, and we know that there is a distinction between an Av and a Tolda in terms according to the Chachamim, in terms of a person does an Av and a Tolda and a Tolda of the same Av, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, just to know the definition of them, which ones were done in the Mishkan and which were not, and according to one answer in Tosfos, that will also tell us if they're going to give Masra, what name of a Malacha do they have to tell him. But in terms of consequences, you have the same consequences for a tolda as for an av, according to everybody. Next, let's figure Gabi Tumas. Next, we have when it comes to Tumas. Tanan, we have the first Mishnah in Kalim starts off. Oves are Tumas. Again, there are Oves, and that implies that there are toldas. The primary kinds of Tumah are Hasheretz, a dead Sheretz, Vashichvas Zera, which is Metame, a person. Which is Matama, the person that came out of, as well as anybody who touches it, or Tmei Mes, and you also have a person who's Tomei Mes. The mess itself is an Avia Voisatuma, and the person who touches the mess becomes an Avatuma. All of these things are Sheretz, Shechvas Zera, and a person who touched the mess, all of them are able to be Matame, other people, as well as Kalim. So there are Ovos, that implies that there are Toldos, but there we know when it comes to Tuma, Toldos say in Lavka Yotzebehem. When it comes to Toldos of these three main types of Tuma, then their Toldos are not like them. Deilo Av Matame Odom Bekalim, because an Ava Tuma can be Matame people in Kalim, any of these three things, a dead Sheretz, Shechazera, or a person who touched a mess, any of them can be Matame other people as well as Kalim, but now you have a Tolda. Let's say, for example, the Sheretz touches a person, the person becomes now a Rishon Matuma. That person that's also called, anything from Rishon and downward, is called Vlad Atuma. So a Vlad is only able to be Matame, food and drinks, thus the Gemara says, but either told us, Urchon Mashkin Matame, Odum Vakalim Loy Matame. A Tolda, a Rishon and downward, can only be Matame, food and drinks. It cannot be Matame, a person, or Kalim. Sometimes you have the Rabbanan, where it can be Matame, a person. For example, you have a Gzera, one of the gzeiras called the Yud Chasidover, is that a person eats tamei food, then they become tamei midirabon. But that's a gzeira dirabon. On a daraisa level, anything from rishon and downward cannot be matame a person, cannot be matame kaven. So there we have others versus toldos, and there we know the toldos are not like the others, unlike with Shabbos, we said. Tosfos points out, even you have, for example, you have the concept called cherev harehu kecholo, a metal keli, or according to some rishonim, any keli that touches a mess itself becomes an avia avos hatum. However, even then, Tosfos says that's true, but it's still, if it touches another metal keli, it won't make it tummy. It's an avia avos hatum. A person that touches a mess becomes an avia. Right. The mess itself is avia avos hatum. The person who touches them becomes an avia. A sword, a metal keli, or according to some rishonim, any keli that directly touches a mess itself becomes an avia avos hatum. Nevertheless, because we have the concept called cherev harehu kecholo. The Torah mentions in the section about Tumas Mess, in the section at the beginning of Parshas Kukas, it uses the expression that if a person touches Bachalal Cheres, which literally means a person killed by the sword. Now, obviously, as the Rambam points out, there's no difference whether a person is killed by a sword or something else. It doesn't matter. Dead is dead. The reason is the Torah wants to hint to us with that the concept called Cherev Harehu Kecholo, a metal keli. Or again, according to somebody showing him, any kind of keli touches a dead body, it itself becomes like the body itself in terms of being an avia avos hatum. Nevertheless, though, that only means that can be matame a person who touches it. Not necessarily. You could also kill. Not necessarily.
In war,
no, no, no. Never mind that. No, even swinging in war. First of all, there's lots of ways. A person. Hold on. First, one second. Relax. First of all, even in those days, a person could die of many different causes. You didn't have to be a person. A person is just as matame if he died naturally as if he's killed, right? But second of all, even as far as a person being killed, it didn't have to be with a sword. It could be with an arrow. It could be with a rock. It could be pushing them off a cliff or something. There's any number of ways that a person could be killed.
Arrow?
So the arrow would be an example of cherev, yeah, because it's a keli or metal keli touching the mess, yeah. But the point is, in other words, when the Torah says b'chalal cherev, it doesn't mean somebody killed.
That killed somebody.
Would be tame, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. It doesn't matter whether it killed him or not. If a person is already dead and a metal keli touches him, that metal keli itself becomes an avia avos hatum. However, though, Tosfos points out, that is true. However, it cannot be matame another keli. It can be matame a person who touches it. So you can have a chain over there. It talks about at the beginning of the Masechta Olos. It talks about you can have a mess where a metal keli touches it, and then a person touches that keli, and so forth. And you can have a chain like that of several items where all of them are tomei tumas shiva. But basically though, the keli cannot make another keli tomei. So in that sense, therefore, so that's what we mean. Told they say and lavka yotze behen, any a tolda of any av is not of the caliber of the av itself. So therefore, so now the question becomes: now that we see that by Shabbos you do have the toldas like the av. On the other hand, by Tumah we're saying it's not. Well, now the question becomes: hochamai here in connection with Nezikin, what is the din? What is the story with the tolda? Amar Papa, yesh mehen kayotz behen, yesh mehen lav kayotz behen. So the Papa says, among the toldos of the Ovis Nezikin, some of them are like the Ovis, and some of them are not. Now, what do we mean by that? That's what we're going to spend the next couple of blat working that out. So, first of all, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Sholish Ovis Nemru B'Shur. Within an ox that causes damage, there are three different Ovis that can apply within the ox itself. Hakeren v'hashen v'haregel. You can have where it gores with its horns. You can have where it eats and where it eats with its teeth, and you can have where it steps on something with its feet. Each of those is a different type of hezek, and each of those has different din.
They're all considered
part of the ox. Later on, the Gemara is going to deal with the question when we said in our Mishnah, Ovis Nezikin Hashur. Did that mean all of these things of the shur, or did we mean specifically within the shur we meant the keren? We're going to deal with that later on in the Gemara. Why they're listed in this order, by the way, Rishonim discussed the question. In the Pasuk, he actually have regel comes before shame, because the expression in the Pasuk is, he yaver ish sada ekerem, a person damages a field or a vineyard, v'shilachas ve'ira, he lets his animals loose, which the Gemara is going to explain later on, refers to regel, uvir v'sdei acher, and they eat within another field, which refers to shame, so then they have to pay. So regel comes before shame. Why in this list over here are we putting shame before regel? So the Rashba says maybe just the Braisa is listing them in the order from the head to the toe of the animal. So you have first the horns, which are on the head, then the shein, which is also in the head, and the regal, which is at the other end of the body. Okay. So first of all, Keren Menolon. Where do we see in the Torah the concept of Keren? So like this, the Tanur Abbanim, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says Ki Yidach, the Pasuk introduces the concept by saying if an ox gores. First it talks about if an ox gores a person, then later on it talks about if it gores another animal. Now, how do we know, what does Yigach mean? The word Yigach means to like attack. But how do we know that means specifically with its horns? So the Braisa says, Ein Negicha El Bekeren. The word Negicha, which is the same Shodesh as the word Yigach, refers to goring with its horns. Shenema, we find a pasuk from Malachim that bears that out. You have in Malachim, at the end of Malachim Aleph, it tells the story. Achav is going to go to war against the kingdom of Aram. He asks Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, to accompany him. Then Yehoshaphat says, in that case, we need a Navi to tell us we're going to be successful. 400 Nevi'im show up, and they're all saying in Nevuah that they'll be successful. But Yehoshaphat realizes something's wrong over here. The Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, no two true Nevi'im ever say the exact same words. Here, all 400 are saying the same thing. So he asks, we need a real Navi, and they bring the Navi Michayru. Meanwhile, the Pasuk says, the Gemara quotes over here, the Pasuk, by Yaslet Sidki of Knan of Kaune Bauza, one of those false Nevi'im named Tzidkiyah and Kenana made horns out of iron. We find throughout Tanakh many times that Nevi'im, when they want to show that their Nevuah is going to be coming absolutely true in the most literal sense, they're going to actually do a Maisa, they're going to do an actual action, Begashmias, in order to make it more real. So the same way the Tzidkiyah, who genuinely believed that his Nevuah was true, so he made horns out of iron, by Yomer, and he says, Koyama Hashem, so says Hashem, Be'elet Nagach HaSarom Ad Kaloisam, Be'elet Nagach HaSarom V'Goymer, with these you will gore Aram. So therefore we see that goring refers to using horns. V'Oymer, and then we have another pasuk that also associates goring with horns. B'chor shere hoder loy, Moshe gives the bracha to Shevet Yosef. He says the firstborn of his ox has his glory. B'kaune re'eim kaunav, he has the horns of a re'eim, which is a very tall, powerful animal that has powerful, strong horns. B'hem amin yenagach, with them he will gore the nation. So we see again that horns are associated with the word yenagach. So the Gemara says, "Ma'iva Oimer, why do we need a second pasuk? Why isn't the pasuk from Malachim enough?" So because you might argue, "Divrei Torah v'Divrei Kabbalah lo yafinan." You can't learn a concept in Divrei Torah from things of Nevi'im. The words of Nevi'im are often called in Tanakh, are often called in Gemara terminology, Divrei Kabbalah, and there's various reasons why, including one point, because the Nevi'im didn't just make up things on their own. Everything they received is by from Hashem, and ultimately they received by tradition going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, the point is, so you could say that Torah is meant to be self-contained. You can't learn a din in Torah from a pasuk in Navi. So therefore, it's not enough to learn from the story of Tzidki and Knana. So therefore, the Braisa says, you're right. Therefore, Toshma. Therefore, you have the second pasuk, B'chor Shorei Hodoloi. But the Gemara asks, why do you even need that? V'hai Melachu? Why are you calling this learning out? Mela, if you're talking about, let's say, learning a Gzeira Shava or something, then yeah, you can't learn a Gzeira Shava between Divrei Torah and Divrei Kabbalah. But here we're not talking about a Gzeira Shava. Here it's just Gilui Milsa Ba'almahu. Here it's just defining. How do you know the definition of the word Negicha, the Negicha Bekerenu? That it means using a horn. So what's wrong learning that from Navi? If you have a word in Chumash that you don't know the meaning of, because it doesn't say over there, it doesn't use the word Keren, and you need a pasuk from Nevi'im to show you that the word Negicha refers to a horn. So what's wrong with that? Why do you need a pasuk from Chumash to do that, to do that as well? You're not learning a Zeta Shava or something like that. And the answer is no. Ela Mahu Detema. No, the reason why you need the second pasuk from Chumash is because you would say, from the story with Tzidki of Knana, you don't have a solid proof. Ki polig rachmana bein tam lemuad, because you could say, you know what, when does the Torah draw a distinction between a tam and a muad? That the first few times the animal does it, it's a tam, and you only have to pay half nezit. And then after that, after three times, it becomes a muad, and you have to pay the full nezit. You could argue, hani mili betzlusha. You know what? When you look at Tzidkiyah and Knana, his horns are detached. He's not attaching them. He doesn't have iron horns growing out of his head. He's holding these iron horns in his hand. Well, the equivalent with an animal would be, let's say an animal grabs a...
Yeah.
the Gemara is taking it as a given that we should already know the concept of time and more. Right, we're going to have it throughout the Masechta. But I mean, the psukim itself already have the concept. But the psukim themselves, when it talks about an ox goring a person, or later on goring an animal, it mentions explicitly that you have to pay half nezek, and then the im shur nagahu mitmel shoshem behuad bevalov, etc. Then you have other rules. So we know the concept of time and mort from the psukim. But now, so you would think, where is the Torah making that distinction? You could argue when you have. You could say hani mila betlusha. Maybe that would apply only to a detached horn. Say, for example, an animal finds a horn on the ground and picks it up with its teeth and then goes and gores with it. Then you can't say you have to pay full nezek when it's a tam. It's not a normal thing for an animal to do that. So you could say the owner had no way of knowing that his animal was going to do something like that, and therefore maybe the turtle gives him a break and says chatzi nezek. But you could argue when the animal's horn is attached, when it gores with its horns that are attached to its head, you could argue then the animal is muad to begin with, because that's a normal thing you could have expected. So therefore, maybe he should be chayiv nezek shalom in the first place. So the proof from Tzidkiv and Knana then would be a weak proof, because after all, there was detached horns. So that is why we need the second pasuk toshma b'chor shorei hadoloi v'gomer. Therefore, we need the pasuk from Moshe's bracha to Yosef. We're there. You're talking about horns that are attached to the animal, and it uses the word b'hem amim yinag. So therefore we see when the Torah says ki yigach, and now we understand the definition of negicha means a horn, then it means a horn attached to the animal's head, like in Moshe's bracha to Yosef, and therefore it means that even when the horns are attached to the head, then you still have the distinction between tam and mord. Tosfos actually discusses the question later on in the Masechta. We're going to be dealing with the question when we say, like this, we say that about when the ox is a tam. That's what the Gemara is saying. You would have thought that maybe when it's attached, you should consider it always more, because there's a high likelihood that the animal is going to do this. Yeah. That is why we need the proof from Moshe's bracha to Yosef, where he's talking about horns that are attached. Doesn't mean that the animal is picking up a horn in its mouth, which you could argue, like with Tzidkiv and Knana, the horns are not attached. The fact is, even when it's detached, that's also an unusual way of doing it. But in fact, it is true. Now that you mention it, it is true that there are Rishonim who learn that you could argue that The Rashba points out, you could argue that maybe, still, you could say that maybe, you could argue, okay, so we're not sure whether when it's attached, it should be chayiv nezek sholim. Maybe it should only be chatzi nezek, sofik mamon l'kula. And the answer is because the fact is that we have to be machmir, because the sofik isur. And also, look, you can't be more machmir with an attached horn, which is a kavachomer, that if even a detached horn, it's going to be chayiv eventually moored. If an animal regularly picks up horns and roars with them, eventually it's going to become a moored. How much more so the ones that are attached to its head? No, on the contrary, the ones that are attached to its head is more shriach. So therefore, kavachomer would tell us that. With that said, Tosfos says that later on in the Masechta, the Gemara deals with the question, when we say that a tam pays only chatzi nezek, what is the reason behind it? Is it that basically we would say you couldn't have expected it at all? So really, in other words, really by rights, a person ought to be completely potter, but the Torah penalizes him because he still should have been taking care of his animal? Or is it the other way around? If we say that is it that we assume most animals are not prone to goring, therefore really he ought to be potter altogether, but the turda puts it on him to pay half the damage though, there's two ways of looking at it. Sorry. You could say stam shvarim lav becheskas shimur kaimi. Most animals are by nature dangerous. Therefore, you would say the first three times we should really be mechayiv in the whole thing. The Torah gives him a break. Yeah, that was it. But so therefore, the Torah gives him a break and says he only has to pay half. Or you could say the other way around. Stam shvarim v'chazkas shimur kaimi. You could say that most animals are normally safe, and therefore it's only a knas for the fact that that he didn't guard this animal. So Tosfos discusses according to that. You could look at, when we talk about over here, whether it's more logical to say that an attached horn is going to be considered first tam and then moored, or maybe we should consider it always tam or always moored, may depend on that factor. How we look at it, is it normal for an animal to gore with its horns, or is it not? Okay, in any case, we have the Braisa that tells us that we see that goring is associated with horns. So you could say it's referring to a detached horn, but we see also from the second part that it's clear that it also includes when the horn is attached to the animal's head and it gores with it. Okay, next, Tolda de Keren Mai. Well, we had Rapapa telling us before that the Toldas, some of them are like the Av and some are not. Well, let's first figure out, what are the Toldas of Keren? So the first one is Negifa, where the animal pushes another one with its body, intending to cause damage. Then you have Nishicha, where it bites. Revitza, where it deliberately lies down on something. Rashi describes, for example, it sees Kalim lying on the road, and it deliberately goes and lies on them, intending to break them. Ubi'ita, and kicking, where it kicks something, intending to cause damage. All of these are considered a tolda of Keren, in the sense that Rashi says, all of them, they intend to damage, but they're not getting any hana out of it. Unlike, for example, when an animal eats, where it's getting a hana out of it, it's eating something that it likes the taste of. Here, it's not kicking or pushing or goring or whatever because it likes the results. It's doing it out of its anger. It's doing it out of its anger or whatever emotion it's feeling.
So according to what Gemara said before, because it's something
as
an av because it's
chashin. No, so what we said is by Shabbos, we said, no. An av, we said, Rashi had said, when it comes to nezikin, an av is defined as whatever is mentioned in the Torah. The Torah does not mention the concept of biting. The Torah does not mention the concept of kicking. It mentions the concept of kiyigach, which we establish now that kiyigach refers to horns. Yeah. Okay, well, the question is, so first the question is, maishna negicha b'kari la'av. So why are you saying negicha is called that goring? It's called an av, dichtiv ki yigach, and we said, because the pasuk says ki yigach, and we explained that the word yigach refers to horn, to goring with the horns. Well, negifa nami ksiv ki yigach. The pasuk says a few psukim later, ki yigach, when an animal pushes another animal. So in that case, then negifa should be considered an av as well. And the answer is no. Hai negifa negichai. You should know, when the Torah uses the word ki yigach, it actually also refers to goring. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Posach b'negifa v'siyim b'negicha. That Posach begins by talking about the word, with the word negifa, but it finishes with the word negicha, because the Posach says, ki yigoif shor ish ashor le'eir. The Posach starts by saying, when one ox yigoif another one, where yigoif is the same shorish as negifa, but then the Posach continues, oi no da ki shor nagahu. If it's known that this ox has habitually been gory, meaning it's unmoored. So it starts with the word ki yigosh, but then it continues with ki yigach. And the reason for that is, lo malach zuhi negifa, zuhi negicha, which tells you that negifa and negicha are the same thing. Incidentally, worth mentioning a few things there, the Eben Ezra. Yeah, it's a synonym. The Gemara is going to explain now why the Pasuk uses that synonym. But worth mentioning in this connection, a cute thing the Eben Ezra says on the Pasuk. The Pasuk starts by saying, ki yigosh shor ish es shor re'ehu. Now, what does the word shor re'ehu mean? It means the ox of his fellow man. Re'ehu means a fellow yid. Shor re'ehu means the ox that belongs to a fellow yid. The Eben Ezra brings from one of the Koroim, the ones who claim to believe only in Torah Shabbat, that he wanted to explain that shor re'ehu means his fellow ox. So the Eben Ezra uses a cute line on that. He says that this fellow, this Taroi, was called Ben Zutta. The Eben Ezra says, you should know, the only fellow that an ox has is somebody like Ben Zutta. An ox does not have a fellow, does not have fellows. The oxen don't have fellowship. You can't talk about a fellow ox, but you're talking about this Ben Zutta. Yeah, he's on the level of the oxen. Anyway, so it means Shor Re'ehu means his fellow Jew's ox. Anyway. So yeah, so the pasuk begins ki yigos, but then it continues ki cho nagahu. So the question then is, maishna gabe odem dechtiv ki yigach, or maishna gabe behemoth dechtiv ki yigos? Well, then why is it when the Torah first introduces the concept of asher goring a person and killing him. It uses the word ki yigach. Why is it when it talks about an asher goring another animal and killing it, it uses the word ki yigach? Why not use the word ki yigach by both of them? The reason is odem de isle mazla, because a person has mazla. Now, mazla is like the word mazel. Rashi explains that it means a person has das to watch himself. Rashi's first explanation is that mazla means he has das to watch himself. Therefore, ksiv ki yigach. Therefore, use the word ki yigach, implying, in other words, the word ki yigach implies that the person, that the shur intends to cause damage and comes rushing at him. So therefore, like the person couldn't protect himself. As opposed to, as opposed to an animal does not have such mazel, it doesn't have das to protect itself, ksiv ki yigach, therefore the pasuk uses the word ki yigach, implying that the animal was just standing there and the other one came and gored it with its horns. In other words, the point is that by a person, you can't use the word kiyigah, you can't use the word kiyigoyf, because that would imply that the person was caught unaware. That would imply that the person was aware of what's going on and still got injured. Well, if he was aware, he would have run away. But an animal doesn't have that kind of das, so therefore it could be...
Therefore the person's at fault.
So not so much the person, no, not the person is at fault. On the contrary. Well, if it was Kiyiga, if you could argue the victim was someone at fault, right? But when it uses Kiyiga, in other words, he's minding his own business, and all of a sudden a shur comes rushing out of nowhere and gets him, that's the only way it would get him. It wouldn't be that he was aware that there's a shur nearby, and he didn't take precautions. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is, a person has a mazel, in other words, a person has a malach looking out for him in Shemayim, so therefore it's much harder to kill a person. Stam yigoyf, if the animal pushes him, is not likely to be fatal. What would be fatal if he actually gets gored, if literally like the horn goes through his body? As opposed to an animal doesn't have a mazel, doesn't have that same level of a malach looking out for it, therefore it's much easier to kill it with just banging into it. So that would be another reason why you have ki yigach by a person and ki yigoyf by an animal. Anyway, so therefore, that's why the different expression. But umilsa agav urche kamash malon. So therefore, incidentally, with that, the Torah is telling you with that, by implying that it's easier to kill an animal than it is to kill a person, because either the person is more aware of what's going on, or because the person has a koyach milamayla mazel. Also, we talk about chassidus refers to a person's shoreh shanashama. So because it's harder to kill a person than an animal, therefore. You can learn from that. By the way, the muad la adam, having muad la behema, if an animal is already muad, that it's already killed people three times, then automatically it's also muad as far as animals. Now, at this point, if this animal goes and kills another animal, muad la adam, if the animal is already muad la adam, if it's already known, then it's automatically muad la behema. But a muad la behema, I have a muad la adam, but the reverse is not true. If an animal has habitually killed other animals, that doesn't make it a muad as far as a person. Now, a person, the Torah tells us, we're going to deal with in more detail as we go through the Masechta, when it comes to a person, in terms of the punishment for the animal, it's the same regardless. Tam muad, the animal gets skila. The difference is that if the animal was muad, then the owner of the animal is also chay of koifer, he's chay of financial payment to the victim's family. And we're going to deal with later in the Masechta what the nature of that financial restitution is and how much it is, etc. But the point is, so if you have an animal that has habitually gored people and is a muad to gore people, automatically it's also muad as far as animals. If it now gores and kills an animal, the owner is paying nezek shalom right off the bat. But the reverse is not true. If it's killed animals, doesn't mean that necessarily it's able so easily to kill people. Again, because you said a person has mazla, and therefore by using the different expressions, ki yigach versus ki yigoyf, then the Torah is implying that point. Tosfos points out a detail within that. Now you have an opinion later on in the Masechta, an opinion of Rapapa, that says that Mord La'odim is not Mord La'behema, unlike our Gemara over here, but Tosfos says what it means is, in other words, that even according to the Papa, what it means is if the animal previously killed a person as well as a shur, as well as a hamur, then and that's three different minim, so it's obviously not specifically against one kind of min, then it's mord for everybody. Even Rapapa would agree with that. All Rapapa means is if it's only killed animals until now, and what the Gemara means over here is if it's only killed animals until now, then it's not mord for a person, and Rapapa would say the other way around, that if it only killed people, it's not mord for an animal. And then Tosfos gives another explanation as well. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so now that we've established we started talking about the tolus of Keren. We explained that even though one of them is Negifa, and the Pasuk does use the word Ki Yigov, we said the Ki Yigov for the Pasuk is not identical with Negifa of the Braisa, because Ki Yigov from the Pasuk is another word for Negicha, for goring, whereas in the Braisa it means pushing. Okay, now let's ask about another one of those tolus. Nishicha told of the Sheni. Isn't biting a tolda of Shane, why are we counting it under Keren? And the answer is loy. No, there's a difference. Shane yesh hanola azeka. The definition of Shane is that the animal has enjoyment from what it did. It eats food and it enjoys it. It enjoys the taste and enjoys the nourishment of it. Ha ein hanola azeka. When it comes to biting, it's not because biting for its hana, it's biting because it's angry or whatever emotion it's feeling at the time. But not that it's actually enjoying what it's biting. Okay. What about the Gemara asks Revitzo over it a told of the regali? What about, we said, lying on Kalim in order to break them or kicking thing? Wouldn't those be a told of regal? Because regal is an animal steps on something and breaks it. And here we're talking about steps or sits on something and breaks it. And the answer is the same thing. Loi, regal has zeka matzi. The difference is the definition of regal is it's a common kind of hezek. An animal walks and it's likely to step on things and break them as it's walking. Chani, en hazek and matzu, these kinds of things, revitza and beitza, are not so common. So therefore, they don't belong under the category of regal, they belong under the category of keren, because like keren, they're uncommon. Like keren, there's no hanah from them. And therefore, that's why they belong under the category of keren. Well, okay, now that we've defined all of the tolders of keren, well, Elder told us, say, and lavka yotzman, amar apoka, ahayah. Well, then when Rapapa said that among the obvious nizikin, some of them, the tolder is not like the ab, then what is he referring to? Ilema ahani. Yeah, when he said at the top of the daf, yeshmehen kayotz behen, yeshmehen en kayotz behen, yeshmehen lav kayotz behen, which one is he referring to? If he's referring ilema ahani, is he referring to these ones that we just listed, all the tolders of keren? No. Maishna keren de kavanos lahazik. What's the difference? After all, keren, when the animal gores with its horns, it intends to damage. Uma moincha, the animal is your property. Ushmirose alacha, and you are responsible, therefore, to guard the animal and prevent it from damaging. Haninami kavanos lahazik. All these things, biting or kicking or whatever, all of these have the same thing in common. So why should there be any difference? If you're chayev for keren, you should be chayev exactly the same way for each of these others. Ella, so you're right, toldos, keren to keren, you have to say necessarily all the toldos of keren are exactly like keren. So let's next assume that Rapapa's statement that some of the toldos are not like the others, maybe he's referring to the toldos of Shane and Regal. Which now, the next piece of Gemara will deal with, first of all, what's the source in the Pesukim for the damages of Shane and Regal, and second of all, then we're going to talk about what the tolders of them are respectively, and work out whether any of those tolders are different than the app. So that will be tomorrow's daf, Hashem.
Okay.